You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today, I'm talking with Benjamin about a very fundamental principle you absolutely should be aware about, the bias-variance trade-off. So stay tuned, and now the music. Have you already signed up for the free webinar that is happening this week on February 17th? No? Then head over to theeffectivestatistician.com now and sign up for this webinar to improve your presentation skills. Presentation skills are so important, and unfortunately, I see far too many really poor presentations. When at the last PSI conference, we were rating all the different presentations, I really realized, and I also got the feedback from the other raters, there are far too many really poor presentations. Although the PSI conference is actually one where, on average, the presentations are much better than compared to most of the other conferences. But still, there's lots of room for improvement. So stand out from the crowd and impress your colleagues, impress your supervisor. But most importantly, be of service to your audience by becoming a better presenter. So sign up for this free webinar where you'll also learn about our upcoming leadership program. So head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and sign up now. Welcome to another episode. This time it's Benjamin and myself, and today we have statistical topic.
I'm not sure if I like it so much. I do not feel comfortable with this since I haven't touched it so far, at least not in with the setting. So I'm really, you know, curious to learn a little bit more about the bias variance trade-off.
Yeah, it's actually a very, very interesting statistical mathematical principle. Once I learned about it, I understood a lot of problems within statistics, because you could see the pattern, and then you see that it applies in many, many different areas of statistics, especially exploratory statistics, or whenever you have, you know, any models that you want to fit or things like this. It doesn't apply so much if you have, let's say, a pre-specified test or something like this, unless you want to kind of have some model specification and model adjustment or model fitting in it. But usually for, you know, you determine your factors and then that's it. But in the kind of whenever you have some freedom in choosing your model, yeah, then this principle applies. It's really interesting. When I was, you know, I learned it from a stats book, of course, but actually the Elements of Statistical Learning, which is one of my favorite books. But for the preparation of this episode, I looked into the Wikipedia definition. That's actually quite good. So we have it linked also in the show notes. Or, of course, you can just go to Wikipedia and search for bias variance trade-off. But let's dive a little bit into what it means. So, but let's kind of dissect the different things. So first, bias. What is bias? Bias is whenever the estimate that you have to estimate something, yeah, is different from what you want to estimate, so to say, in plain language, yeah, or in mathematical terms, the expectation of your estimate isn't equal to the model parameter that you want to estimate, yeah. So a nice kind of picture for it is if you have a target, yeah, Like, you know, a target that you shoot on with your gun or whatever. Yeah, so these different rings you can imagine, yeah. And you have bullseye in the middle, and then, you know, you have the different rings around it. And you shoot with your gun or your bow or whatever on it. And, or you throw a ball, which is maybe not as militaristic. Yeah.
No children.
If you're always a little bit off a bullseye, yeah, that means you have a bias. And the variability describes how much kind of you divert from, you know, the points that you're already actually targeting. Yeah. So you can think about it. If you have a lot of variability, yeah, then your shoots are all over the place. And if you have a very little variability, then it's in a very, very small area where all your shoots are. And bias is when, you know, even though you're very, very precise, you're always off a little bit. Yeah. And if you're unbiased, yeah, on average, you're always kind of in the middle, but maybe you're spread quite around the middle. Yeah. And what this bias trade-off now means is that in principle, you can't achieve hitting in the middle with high precision. Yeah. So basically, you always choose between even you have, you know, very high precision. So all your shoots are within, you know, a very, very small area, but then you're always off target somehow. Yeah. Or you're more and more on target on average, but you get more and more spread.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a nice picture. I mean, that obviously says that the bias variance trade-off doesn't exist in sports, but it does exist. I had the, you know, the phrase, and I know that's in the context of machine learning. So, you know, where when you try to, let's say, you know, try to find a specific matter, and, you know, the more, you know, it's the same. It's basically, you know, the more you aim for the matter, you know, the stronger the bias of a certain like aspect is that you're bringing in there, you know, the higher the the variance gets. So the mm-hmm. you know, the you know, meeting this target or meeting this or finding this pattern is like you know, it's a trade-off against, you know, the less you give as a bias or the less you use as a bias, you know, the easier you find it. But, you know, there are also other ways, you know, other pattern you could find, so you don't specialize into one. So it's kind of a mixture between the bias and variance. So that's where I heard the, you know, at least it's my understanding of what I heard at that time about machine learning. But that also on the other side is, you know, what you just said about the, you know, when you try to model data. So it's more really in the exploratory field of statistics, where you dig into data and look into this, where this bias variance trade-off really comes in place.
Yeah. It's also associated with over and under fitting. Yeah. And we'll see that when we now go into the three examples that we want to dig into here. Yeah. So the first is you do subgroup analysis, yeah? And let's say you have two different interventions, yeah? Like in pharmacology, you have treatment A and treatment B, and now you want to understand which of the subgroup of your population has the biggest treatment difference for these, yeah? And you start with, let's say, on average, you have a treatment difference of, let's say, 2 points on whatever scale, yeah? And then you dig into it, and for this, you know, on average, yeah, for all the population, of course, you know, you have the smallest variability of that treatment effect, yeah? Because you have all your sample to describe this treatment effect. But of course, for any given patient, that you can think of. Yeah. You have quite a big a bias here because you don't utilize any of the information of this patient. So the age, the gender, the severity of the treatment, or any other factors that describes this patient. Yeah. Now, on the other hand, now you can use these kind of factors like age, severity, gender, whatsoever, to dig more and more into the patient characteristics. Yeah. And then the better and better you describe in terms of the precision, in terms of, you know, the bias, what exactly this patient will experience. Yeah. So the actual treatment effect for a given patient, it gets more and more unbiased. But of course, you then have less and less patients that are, you know, that have these characteristics. So for a given patient, then, you know, the variability of the treatment estimate increases. Yeah. Like you have, let's say, you'll first look into by gender. Yeah. And maybe only 30% of your patients are female. And then, you know, you already have lost 70% of your sample. And then maybe you only want to look into older patients than 60 years, then you have already, instead of 30%, only 10%. And then you only want to look into those with high severity, and then you are left with maybe 2% of the sample. Yeah. Now you have, you know, you're targeting, yeah, quite nicely into bullseye, but you only have 2% of the sample to actually understand your variability. Yeah. So and that's a common problem.
What is the typical way of getting around? I mean, usually when I remember doing these exercises on, you know, on exploratory analysis, maybe even too tough. It's just, you know, like digging into the data thing. It often kind of was kind of a, you know, over the thumb estimate of, you know, we now have 10 patients less, doesn't make, you know, what is the meaning of a subgroup of 10. And then you can kind of, sometimes you say, well, you know, just do it descriptively because, you know, you can't do really anything about it. So what is there any, let's say, systematic or more systematic way of measuring this and giving advice and how to handle this? Because obviously it's a problem that we all know. It's just that, a different way of naming it, but also maybe there's a systematic approach behind it that we could, provide to the statisticians out there.
I think there's no clear, easy answer to this. Yeah, because it always depends on what your overall question is and on what you truly want to get to. Yeah, sometimes, you know, you really don't care about the precision. Yeah. And some statistical applications, having something that is unbiased is much more important. Yeah. And then you tend to have, you know, much more kind of granular things. On the other hand, sometimes, you know, the precision is really the biggest importance. Hmm. Yeah. Let's say for a phase 3 study, yeah, where you have, you want to get a, FDA approval or an EMA approval, and you want to show superiority, and there maybe, you know, you really kind of minimizing your variability is the biggest goal, and so therefore you want to, you know, you accept that, you know, for any given patient you're a little bit off, but at least you can show that on average for all patients this works. Yeah. So you're not so much maybe interested in, you know, a specific treatment effect for a given patient. So I think it's not really a right or wrong. It always depends on the business environment. Yeah. Also, you know, there may be different, you know, consequences associated. Yeah. So think of, let's say, a diagnostic test, yeah, where you also have different things. Let's say if you're false positive, Yeah. That may have different consequences to being false negative. Yeah. And here it's the same. Yeah. So it really depends on what are the associated consequences of over or underfitting.
Exactly. I mean, that is basically the way that you usually, you know, approached a subgroup. Anyhow, it's just that, you know, I'm wondering if there has been some more systematic approach to it. Okay.
I don't think so. Yeah. It's just not. Well, for a very specific scenario, you can probably come up with something optimal.
Yeah.
But it really always depends on the different scenarios.
Yeah. No, that's what I was afraid of. Yeah.
that's the beauty about statistics. You know, very, very often it's about understanding the problem very, very deeply, and then you can come up with a rather good answer. But it's really difficult to have something like a cookbook approach. Hugely. But that's the art of statistics.
It is. And that's why it is so special.
That's why I love it.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go to example number two, cluster analysis. When you do cluster analysis, the problem always is, well, one of the problems is use finding your metrics for how you define the clusters. And we have actually done in podcast episodes about cluster analysis. So if you want to dig into this, then just go back a couple of episodes, actually quite some episodes, I guess, to search for the cluster one. So the problem when you have actually defined your metric is that how many clusters do you want to have? Yeah. And if you have these hierarchically clustering, or actually for any clustering algorithm, you need to decide what is the optimal number of clusters. And here, like with the subgroups again, you can see that if you have just one cluster, yeah, you have all your sample, yeah, and then any parameter that you estimate within this has a very, very low variability. Also pretty very good precision. So let's say you want to estimate in this sample, don't know, some mean or proportion or something like this within the overall cluster. And the biggest cluster is everybody. Yeah. Then, you know, that's the biggest precision. But then if you go into these different clusters and then, you know, do these kind of things again, you can see that, okay, now any parameters that you estimate within there, yeah, you will see that it becomes more and more specific for the population you're targeting or for the underlying subjects or the underlying whatsoever units you're looking into. But of course, you can only estimate within this cluster, yeah? And so the more granular you get to the clusters, you know, up to the point that in each cluster there's only one subject.
And, in the extreme,
you
know,
you have maximum unbiasedness, yeah? But of course, also maximum variability because you have only one patient left or one subject left that you can have your estimates on. Yeah. And so there's the variability is basically infinity. Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah. And that is again, I mean, without this, you know, this name, nice name, it's just really something that we all know when working with cluster analysis, you know, if you overdo the clustering, it's just, you know, it's a fancy result, but not useful. And therefore, you know, we have to find a balance again and how to make use of the clusters and deep dive into more and more specifying it, rather than just, you know, starting from square one with all or, you know, to square whatever it is, then with a sample size of n equals one at the end. So it's not helpful either. So we have to find a balance. and trade off, you know, bias against variance. It's the
And here you now also see kind of the subwording in terms of over and underfitting. Yeah. So if you have overfit, then, you know, you have not enough patients anymore within these clusters. And then, of course, you know, whenever you get a, you know, a patient that hasn't been in the sample, yeah, in your training set, you can't really fit it because, you know, you'll always be kind of off, yeah, because you're overfitted. Yeah, so you have even basically modeled all the noise that is in the data. Yeah, and that is then overfitting. Whereas underfitting is, you know, you don't have enough, and so you're just, you know, always off in terms of your bias. Last example is regression analysis. Yeah, so let's say you have here a linear regression, yeah, and now you put the different factors in it. Yeah, so additional covariates, and these can be categorical or, you know, continuous covariates, or, you know, different interactions of these covariates and so on. You know, you can become more and more sophisticated in terms of your model, and you can, you know, add more and more parameters in there, and, you know, polynomials of your parameters and whatsoever. You can get more and more sophisticated, but you'll see that, of course, the degrees of freedom that you have, you know, decrease more and more for these different parameter estimates. And so the variability of the different parameter estimates increases more and more. Yeah, the more you add these. Of course, if you have a very, very high sample size, yeah, at the beginning, it doesn't matter so much. Yeah, whether you have 1, 2, 3, or 4 parameters in there. But if you get really to very, very many parameters, and you have kind of these machine learning algorithms that look into all kind of interactions for the different parameters, and maybe, you know, polynomials of that, and all kind of different combinations, you can very, very easily end up with hundreds or thousands or millions of parameters in these models. Yeah, and there you get then into the danger of overfitting.
Yeah, that's a very, very good example as well. I think regression analysis and the way of, you know, working with it is, you know, well known to every one of us. And to really kind of get an estimate, or maybe like a systematic way of approaching or thinking, considering it in this balance is quite nice. And actually when I looked into the Wikipedia article, there was a quite nice, wording which said, explanation is basically, you know, something which I think, you know, everyone should still consider. The trade-off is universal. It says it's been shown that a model that is asymptomatically unbiased must have an unbounded variance, and that is just. Think about it. It's really that, you know, if you because we always try to fit the, you know, find the best model. It's just, you know, there is no best model, because, you know, if you have one fitted best, it's just, you know, a complete opposite with the other one. So it's always a balance between two.
Yeah. It's the some people also call it the curse of dimensionality. Yeah. So you know, the more parameters you put in, the more problems you get.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks so much. That was a shorter episode, but on a very, very important topic. And I hope you get an understanding of next time when you fit a model or do a cluster analysis, or you do subgroup analysis, or any kind of these, you know, models where you select the number of parameters or whatsoever, you're conscious about what kind of trade-off you're going in there. And what do you really want to achieve? Do you want to have something that is very good in terms of bias, or something that is very good in terms of precision, and that you need to choose here?
Very good. Then have a nice day, everyone.
I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today and learn so much from the video-on-demand content, the free registration to all the PSI webinars, and much, much more. Visit the PSI website at psiweb.org and learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today.